Welcome to the Drop Time Report. Turn up the volume and listen to amazing stories about big bucks and the hunters who harvested them. Here is your host, outdoor writer, Tracy Breen.
Welcome to the Drop Time Report. I'm your host, Tracy Breen. On this week's episode, we're going to have on Jason Koger. It's going to be a little bit of a unique episode. Be the first for most of us, I would guess, as far as who we're listening to. This is a gentleman who actually lost both of his arms in an ATV accident many years ago. He was electrocuted, and one of his passions in life was hunting. And so after he lost his arms, he tried to figure out a way to get back at it. Eventually, he was given bionic hands. So he has prosthetic arms and bionic hands and has been able to take up hunting again. And then the most amazing thing about his story, on top of overcoming all those things, he was able to kill a buck last fall in the state of Kentucky. That was the largest buck killed last year with archery tackle. He just goes through his story, his personal story of overcoming his disability, how, in fact, he lost both of his arms. He highlights that, highlights his faith in God and how he was able to get through all those issues and pick up hunting again. He has an amazing positive attitude, unlike, I think, most of us, if we ended up in a situation like this, would probably cry in our soup. But instead, he just picked himself up and got after it. And so it was pretty cool listening to his story. What a lot of you probably don't know about me is I have cerebral palsy and have had more surgery than I have fingers and toes. And so hearing his perspective was also nice for me to hear as well. It was pretty cool. But before we get him on the show, I'd like to thank my sponsors. Title sponsor, Redneck Blinds, Fourth Arrow Camera Arms, Windscent, Morel Targets, Huntworth Clothing. Check out their website if you're looking for some new clothing, huntworthgear.com. Pine Ridge Archery, makers of the Nitro Vein, Lucky Buck Mineral, Grim Reaper Broadheads, Schaefer Performance Archery, Illinois Connection Outfitters in Pike County, Outdoorsman's, makers of great backpacks and tripod systems, and Wilderness Athlete. If you're looking to shed a few pounds, check out wildernessathlete.com. They have some great nutritional products. My favorite, their Hydrate and Recover drink. Enter Drop 10 at checkout and get a discount. And because we're heading into the spring season, turkey season is right around the corner, don't forget to check out Redneck Blinds, Ghillie Blind, and their soft-sided blinds. They don't just make fiberglass blinds. They make some great semi-portable blinds as well. Let's go ahead and get Jason on the phone. Welcome to the Drop Time Report, Jason. How are you today?
I'm good. How you doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good. We'll try this again. We had a little connection issue earlier, so we'll just try again here. But congratulations on killing a monster buck.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You know that they, you know, the odds of killing a booner, they say, are, you know, you oftentimes have a better chance of winning the lotto. In a lot of ways, you won the buck lotto, right?
Absolutely. I am very blessed and had a lot of people tell me that may not happen again. I said, that's fine. It happened once. I'm good. So,
yeah, absolutely. So your buck, just to kind of let people know beforehand here a little bit before you tell the story, gross scored over 190 inches. You killed him in the state of Kentucky. In the 2018-19 season, he was the largest buck killed in Kentucky with archery gear. You shot him with a crossbow. What makes your story unique? Probably the first guy ever to shoot a buck of that caliber with no hands or arms, right?
That's exactly right. Yes, and that's very, very true. So,
you know, everybody out there, you heard that right. Jason has no arms or hands. Obviously, if you don't have arms, you don't have hands, and they kind of call him the bionic man. He was the first guy fitted with bionic hands. And he's going to tell us a little bit about that today, as well as his big buck that he killed in Kentucky. How old are you, Jason?
I'll be 41 next week.
Okay. So you had this accident then 10, 12 years ago on an ATV. And just kind of, you know, let's, most of the time we start these podcasts with a hunting story. Your life story is pretty unique. So I want to start there and lead up to the hunting. So tell us what happened to you.
Yeah, so on March 1st, 2008, my grandfather, he farms about 2,300 acres of corn and soybeans, and I live on the farm, and I have been around this farm, you know, for 29 years, and every single day, you know, I could go around it with my eyes closed, and this particular day on March 1st of 2008, I decided to go on a quick four-wheeler ride. It was the first warm day of the year, and it was going to be a quick, literally 5-minute ride. I have three kids now, but I had two at the time. My oldest was 21 months old. My youngest was 3 months old. And I literally had just laid them down for a nap and told my wife, like, hey, I'll be right back. I need some fresh air. I'm going to ride around the farm. I'll be right back. I took off. And what happened is I came in contact with a downed power line. And sometime that year, we had an ice storm and a wind storm, and I don't know which one did it, but the guide wire had broke on the telephone pole, which made the pole lean to one side, which made the line swoop. And I went over a culvert, one area that you have to go over, and, you know, unless you hit a big old ditch. And those power lines were at the lowest point right in the center of that culvert, which was about 30 inches off the ground, and I didn't see it in time, and I came in contact with both lines, and I took 7,200 volts of electricity. So, go ahead.
It's just mind blowing that level of electricity.
Absolutely, so you know, a lot of people don't understand what 7,200 volts is capable of, and obviously, you know, it shut my whole neighborhood down. I mean, most people probably don't live through 7,200 to even talk about. But what it does is it burns you from the inside out. And I think just from TV and movies, when you see somebody get electrocuted, you automatically think that it blows off extremities. And it does not do that. What it does is, I mean, obviously there is an exit, you know, hole. It came out of my left thumb and basically blew my left thumb off. And I woke up, it stopped my heart for 30 seconds. I woke up, felt like I was literally on fire. Had a helicopter come pick me up. But to be honest with you, I thought, man, it's not that big of a deal because it's just my left thumb. And going back a little bit, my grandfather passed away about a month before I got hurt. And my grandfather was a single arm amputee. He's the only amputee I've ever seen in my life. And I remember telling my wife, laying there getting ready to get on his helicopter, that, you know, it's not that big of a deal. It's just my thumb. I mean, Papa lost his whole entire arm and had a, you know, a hook. And I said, you know, I mean, I'm not going to complain about this. I had no idea, you know, how, you know, what, and when you get electrocuted, it burns you from the inside out. It causes and blood inside your body, and all that has to go somewhere, and your body's trying to get it out, and it's going through your kidneys and basically out your, you know, your urine. And I remember they capped me in the helicopter. I remember looking down at the bag that was collecting my urine, and it looked like Dr. Pepper. It was that dark, and basically I didn't know what that was until, you know, way after my accident. But what that is all the poison and all the blood that's inside your body was shutting my kidneys down. So it really wasn't about the burns that I had. And it was all about, let's find out where the infection is. We got to get rid of the infection, which was in my hands. And immediately that night, they started amputating. I was in a induced coma for 3 days. And the reason I was in an induced coma is because every single day they amputated more and more until they got the infections, until my kidneys straightened up. And once that happened, you know, amputation was over, and it left me as a bilateral arm amputee.
Wow. So you have no arms at this point. At this point, did they realize, you know, you were going to be a candidate for these bionic arms, or did that come a little bit later?
That was a little bit later. So basically, when I woke up, you know, I was told that you know, I didn't have arms. My dad was the one that broke the news to me. And, you know, obviously I laid there and I had a lot of thoughts of, you know, like, why does things like this happen to good people? You know, I never done anything to anybody. I was a good person. And, you know, the first thing that I thought is like, you know, just like, why? I just don't understand. I understand now. And I've always had faith, and I've always known that, you know, God will take care of us one way or another. And we all go through hard times. You know, I mean, some of us, it might just be a financial hard time, but we all gonna go through hard times. And this world was not intended for it to be perfect, and it never will be. So I had faith, but I had no idea how my life was going to change. I mean, you know, I thought about, you know, how am I going to be able to afford to feed my kids? And, you know, I had two kids. I had a wife. I was 29 years old. You know, how am I going to provide a roof over their head? How am I going to be able to live? How am I going to be able to put my own clothes on, feed myself? I mean, everything was going through my mind. And I was supposed to have been in the hospital for months. And my doctor, I told him, I said, man, I got two kids at home. I'm not going to be in here for months. I can't. And I asked him what all I had to do in order to get out of the hospital. And he told me several things to do. And he also, one thing he told me, he said, Jason, I want you to come up with one goal that you have. And I want to help you reach this goal before you leave this hospital room. And I told him, I said, I already know what I want. And he said, what do you want? And my exact words were, I don't know if I'll ever be able to feed myself. I don't know if I'll ever be able to put my own clothes on. But there's one thing that I have to be able to do, and that I have to be able to hold my kids again. And if I can do that, then everything else will kind of just happen. Obviously, that little story, you know, brought a lot of tears to me and him. And he promised me that would happen. And a couple of days later was the very first day that I seen my kids after my accident. And he was going to bring them in my room, and I would not allow him to bring them in my room. And I went into the waiting room. They had to take feeding tubes and everything out. I went to the waiting room, and I held my kids for the very first time. And right then, I knew that everything was going to be all right. I didn't know how, but I knew it would.
Cool. Something else you did shortly after, it sounds like you told me, was you're able to turkey hunt, correct?
Absolutely. So
how long after the accident, how long after the accident did you turkey hunt?
So, you know, I got hurt March 1st, 2008, and turkey season comes in the beginning to the middle of April. And again, I had no prosthetics at the time. I had nothing. And I was still going through surgeries, actually. And my buddy called me one day and he said, hey, he said, let's go turkey hunting. And I thought about it for a minute. I was like, man, how in the world am I going to go turkey hunting? And literally I called my doctor. We have a really good relationship. And I called him on the cell phone and I said, hey, doctor, his name was Jeffrey Guy. So Dr. Guy, I said, can I go turkey hunting? And he said, well, I have no idea. And I said, well, I mean, I want to go. And he goes, well, why do you think you cannot go? And I said, man, I'm really worried about a tick, because I still had open wounds. And I said, I'm worried about a tick getting inside my open wounds and you have to amputate more. And he laughed and he said, just make sure you spray off really, really good. I said, all right. So I called my buddy back and I told him, I said, I'll go. And I went to his house, spent the night with him. I told him, I said, Sam, I understand, and I said, I'm completely fine with this, that I'm going to sit in the woods next to you. We're going to call in a turkey, and you're going to shoot it, and it's going to be awesome. I'm just glad that I'm in the woods with you. And I went down to his house, spent the night with him that night, and I walked in his living room, and he said, buddy, I'm not killing a turkey tomorrow. And I said, well, why are we going? And he said, because you are. And I said, all right, now how's this going to happen? How am I going to shoot a turkey when I have no arms, no prosthetics, no nothing? And he goes, I don't know, but we're going to figure it out. So we sat in his living room, and we took the two screws out of the butt of the shotgun, and we put a ratchet strap on it and ran the screws back in it.
We put did a little MacGyver. Did a little MacGyver work.
We put a tripod with a radiator hose clamp on the front and a string from the trigger to my mouth. Now, before my accident, I have killed turkeys, longbeards before, but the first turkey I seen after my accident was a Jake. And it came out, and I told him, I said, "Dude, I'm going to try it. I don't know if I'll hit him, but I'm trying him." And I killed my first turkey a month after my accident with no prosthetics. And, you know, I know I told you this story earlier before we was on the podcast. And the year before I got hurt, I killed a 152-inch deer. That was my biggest deer at the time. And, you know, the year I got hurt, I went hunting for the first time, crossbow. I only had one arm at the time, one prosthetic. And I told my buddy the first deer I seen was a button buck. And, man, I shot and killed that button buck. That was the first deer I killed after my accident. And, you know, it meant way more to me than that 152-inch any day of the week. You know, you know, that's one thing that I want to talk about. Yeah, I definitely want to talk about the big deer I killed. You know, that was an amazing deer that I harvested. And yet I feel like killing deer shouldn't be about the size of them anymore, because I know what it's like to kill a button buck to, you know, I had killed a 152-inch deer, and it literally means every time you go on a hunt, it's the memories. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, for sure. So not to interrupt you and digress, but the turkey, just so people understand, you pulled the trigger with your mouth and a string attached to the trigger, correct?
Yes. Yes.
So
I just barely pulled my chin to my chest, and basically that's how I shot. And, you know, I told my buddy, when we went hunting like that, I told him, I said, we may end up at Vanderbilt Hospital again. I don't know if it's a good idea or not, but it was an amazing feeling. And it literally, I think that turkey hunt is what opened my eyes up to what the possibilities were going to be. You know, I had started looking into prosthetics at the time, just Googling and trying to find stuff myself. And, you know, I found out about these bionic hands that you were talking about, and I called a prosthetist, and I told him, I said, that's what I want. I want those bionic hands that are brand new. You know, they're the newest bionic hands in the world. And he told me that it would never happen. And I said, why won't it happen? And he said, because they're too expensive and your insurance will say no. And he was right. My insurance said no, but I would not take no for an answer. I started calling the doctors that denied me, and I told them my life. I told them what I wanted to be able to do, and I fought for them. And that's why I became the first person in the world with two bionic hands, because everybody said it wasn't going to happen. And I would not take no for an answer. and literally I became the first person in the world with bionic hands.
So we can briefly touch on that. Those bionic hands are controlled by muscle movement, but they can mm-hmm. open and close. And there's probably, you know, lots of wires and computer chips and everything else in there.
Absolutely. You know, they've come a long way even since I got mine. I'm on my fifth generation hand. I've been the first person in the world five times. I work with the company now and teach people how prosthetics work. And they went from a literally open and close to today. I mean, I have an Apple app for them. I can control how fast, how slow they go. It has the same technology as a cell phone. So when your cell phone knows where it is in space at all times. So when you hold your phone horizontal and then you turn it straight up and down vertically, the screen turns because it knows where it is in space. Well, my hand knows where it is in space as well. So I can hit a certain trigger when my arm is parallel to the ground, and basically it says, all right, what do you want to do now? And when I lean forward, backwards, left, or right, it'll go into a grip like anything that I have programmed, a pinch grip, tripod, whatever it is. I can completely change all that with an app. And man, this whole situation has opened up doors all over the country.
So tell me, so from a shooting perspective, how do you pull the trigger on a crossbow?
So I use body-powered hooks, which is the same that you've seen since Civil War days. And I basically hold the crossbow with my left hook, and I cradle it on my shoulder, and I hold it tight on my shoulder. And then I have to look down because obviously I can't see. I make sure that my hook gets inside of the trigger guard. And once it's inside the trigger guard, I'm back looking through the scope. And basically I pull my arm back and I can feel a little bit of a tension that I'm touching the trigger, but I don't know exactly when it's going to go off, which, you know, is a good thing because I usually don't jerk very much. And
yeah, it's like back tension release.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. So,
okay. You're not using your bionic hands then when you're hunting.
No. And the reason is these hands, obviously, I tell people it's about like driving a Lamborghini or a work car. Like, what are you going to drive to work? You're not going to drive a Lamborghini. You're only going to use it whenever you weather's nice, whatever. And these hands can't get wet. So, you know, just the weather in general is what scares me. It ain't that the hands could not do it. It's just you got to think about the weather, and I don't want to go out. I've killed a deer with my bionics before. I actually went to Kansas, and I forgot my body powered, and I got there, and I was like, crap, I forgot my body powered. I got to hunt with my bionics, and I did, and I killed, I don't know, he was probably 140 or close to 150-inch deer there, and I did that with my bionics. So it's not that you can't do it. It's just you shouldn't do it.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Just like a typical hands, man, right? A typical man. We push the envelope.
Yep. These hands are $150,000 a piece. So, you know, it's just one of the things you got numbers, dollar signs in your mind, and you just got to be smart on what you're using and why you're using what you're using. So
let's break down the hunt then, or the story of the buck, big buck here. So you have a farm that's 100 and some acres, and then kind of tell the story how you ended up being able to hunt the property right next to it and find this buck.
Yep. So I own 179 acres of just hunting ground in Kentucky, Western Kentucky, and we've killed some great deer on it. You know, that's where I kill my 150s and 160s been killed on it. And It was funny because I have a great friend named Jeff Jacobs, and Jeff called me one day. He's like, hey, man, this guy came in the store talking to me and said he's got this farm that we're allowed to hunt. You know, he lives out of town. He wanted us to kind of oversee it for him, make sure, put up gates, you know, just do a little bit of maintenance work on it. And he said, the guy told us we can hunt it. Let's go out there and put cameras up. And this was probably about a week before rifle season came in. So season's already been in. And Jeff knew this area really, really well, and he knew that there was, you know, some nice deer in that area. So we got us a Spartan camera, and we put it on a tree. And the very first night that we put that camera on a tree, we got a picture of this deer. And, you know, at the time, it was like, man, he's a booner for sure. You know, he's a 180, 190. I mean, he may hit 200. Like, he's a great deer. We started hunting him, and actually, I think it was the first weekend of rifle. Jeff called me. He goes, hey, I'm going to go hunting over there. And I was out of town, and I said, man, good luck. And he went over and got in a stand, and that deer came out about 10, 15 yards from him during rifle season. And he pulled up the gun, turned off the safety, pulled the trigger, and his gun didn't go off. And it made a little bit of an indention on the bullet, but it wasn't hard enough to make the bullet go off. Well, the deer ran. And then about an hour after he shot at that deer, a deer came out. He ended up scoring at 160. And anyway, Jeff took that deer. So Jeff's tag was filled. So the next day, his son went, 16-year-old boy. He gets in the stand. He texts his dad. He said, Dad, there is a monster of a deer in front of me. And he's chasing a doe. I can't get a shot at him. He's just running, running, running. Well, he watched him for about 45 minutes chasing a doe. Never could get a shot on him. Well, that was the last time that deer was seen in the daylight hours. we had pictures of him every single night. He was living there. He just was not coming in daylight. I started hunting because Zachary ended up killing about a 140, mid 140 deer there. And so I was the only one left with a deer tag. So I'm hunting as much and as often as I can. I was walking into the woods probably a mile away. I did not want to ride four-wheelers in it. I mean, I was doing everything I could possibly do not to push this deer out. I actually found his shed about, from the year before, found a shed about 30, 40 yards from my stand, one side. And so anyway, I hunted as hard as I could. And the very last day of season come up, we actually went to the ATA. I was showing people pictures of it. And I said, man, I've been trying to kill this deer, but I'm sure by the time I get home, he's going to lose his antlers. So the very last day of season, the last 5 minutes of season, I looked across the field and I had a doe running towards me. And there was two coyotes chasing a doe. Well, the coyotes ran into this deer trail where I thought that buck had been coming from. That's where he had been coming from. As soon as those coyotes ran in the woods, over to my right, I started seeing deer come out. And I'm talking about there might have been, I didn't even count. I bet there was 10 or 15 deer coming. I mean, they were just coming from everywhere. And I'm assuming that the coyotes probably jumped them up, pushed them out. Well, the last deer that came out was that one and still had both horns. And I watched him walk across the field and come in front of me probably about 40 to 45 yards. And now all this is on film with a cell phone camera. My buddy Jeff was sitting with me. And Jeff, you know, I told him, I said, I'm about to stop him. And I stopped him. And he was broadside. And I released the arrow and basically watched him run about 30, 40 yards and fall over. And it was a, you know, double lung heart shot. And man, one of the best feelings in the world. Not only that I killed a booner, but I did all this. You know, people don't think about what I have to do. You know, I gotta see my hook go into the trigger guard. I got 10 deer all around me, behind me, around me. So I'm making sure they're not seeing me move. You know, I'm bringing the crossbow up to my shoulder with two hooks. You got to make sure that the hooks don't make noise. I mean, because they do.
I can imagine. Yeah, that's the noise in itself. When you first called me today, I mean, I could hear those hooks clicking around, and that's why you had to go to speakerphone, because they. Yeah, I mean, it's like hunting with two Yeti cups in your stand or something. I mean, clanging them together.
Absolutely. You know, and you think about, you know, the little things that the hunters talk about is what makes them successful. You know, obviously scent control is huge for me. When you wear body powered stuff, you know, you got your residual limb inside of a prosthetic and, you know, you sweat and they stink. You know, I started using, you know, scent blocker clothes and, you know, I mean, it's everything that I use. Scent crusher, I started using scent crusher, and I don't work for them. I'm not a pro staff for them. That stuff works because it worked for me. This deer was downwind from me. I mean, everything possible, it worked out absolutely perfect. You know, I got to worry about even warmth. You know, I tell people all the time that I can't wear a whole lot of clothes. This was the coldest day of the year. It was probably 10 degrees. I mean, it was freezing outside. I can't wear a bunch of clothes because if I have a bunch of bulky stuff, I can't shoot. So, you know, I started wearing Under Armour stuff just because of the heat and then Arctic Shield, you know, perfect example. Those guys have some clothing that will keep you warm without wearing 14 layers of stuff. All that means, it's amazing what it means to me. It might not mean much to anybody else, but it means a whole lot to me.
Yeah. You have to overcome a lot to do it. That's for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, how do you get into a tree stand?
You know, it's funny. Jeff told me the first time he ever hunted with me, he's like, man, I want to see how this is going to work. And he said, it's going to be loud. But Jeff will tell anybody that I'm as quiet, if not quieter, than somebody that's got two hands. And literally, I climb up ladder stands. You know, we hunt out of redneck blinds. This particular time that I killed my deer, I was hunting in a ladder stand. And I was climbing up, and I just take my time. I put my hook on each step just like somebody would their hand, but I do it really slow, and so it ain't clinging and clanging. And when I put it on there, and then I just climb up. And, you know, that's one thing I did not want. I did not want anything that was adaptive. And I do everything that I do, driving a truck, putting my clothes on, to shooting guns, to hunting. I do everything. And if I go hunt with you tomorrow, I can use anything that you got, and I can go hunting with it. And that's what I wanted. I didn't want anything adaptive. You know, man, I've had an opportunity to hunt some awesome places. I became the first person in the world to kill a bear with a crossbow as a bilateral arm amputee. In Canada, I get to hunt Kansas. I hunt Kentucky. I've been to Pennsylvania. You know, I became friends with some of the biggest hunting celebrities, you know, the Lukoskis and, the T-Bones and, you know, Jana Waller. And I've been on several of their shows, not those in particular shows, but, you know, I've been on Schoolbound TV. I've been on Brotherhood Outdoors. I got to kill a pig in front of everybody, you know, with a gun. And it blows my mind how, and I'm going to go back to what I said from the very beginning about my faith. God has opened up way more doors than I could ever possibly imagine. I don't brag about what I do. I don't do what I do to be famous or anything else. I do what I do because I want to show people that life is not over when something bad happens. You can overcome just about anything. And that's my message. If somebody wants to remember my name, follow me on Facebook, hey, that's great. Instagram, whatever. But if they don't get any of that, I want them to know that life is not over. And it's way too easy to end your life when something bad happens instead of trying to overcome something. And I did a TEDx talk not long ago, and my TEDx talk was called "Why Should We Just Survive When We Can Thrive?" And that's for all of us. Like, why just say, all right, it's okay to wake up in the morning and just be here? You know, why not try to inspire somebody to do something better?
Absolutely. That's awesome.
So
what, and, you know, go ahead.
No, I mean, I've even had opportunities to do some really big shows. You know, I did an episode on Hawaii 5-0. I was a bad guy and, you know, became really good friends with all those actors. And I ended up doing I did an Apple commercial that was on the Super Bowl in 2014. I've done movies with Matthew McConaughey. I've done hunting shows, you know, all this other stuff. And what I did with that, especially the Hawaii 5-0, I became great friends with RoboCop from the 80s. And here I am from a really small hometown in Kentucky. And I asked Peter Weller, I said, man, won't you come to Kentucky and meet my community? And he did that. He flew in town. He's flew in town a couple times. And the very first time he come in town, you know, here I am friends with this actor, and I want other people to meet him. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to charge $10 a person to meet this guy. So I did. So the next day, Peter Weller and I was at my house, and we was counting this money, and it was $18,000. And I gave $18,000 to 7 different local charities. 100% of it I gave away. The second time we did it, it was $21,000. And I gave $21,000 to every elementary school in my hometown for Christmas Wish. I mean, and the name of the event was called Handing Back. I mean, that's what I want to do. Cool. I want to give back to people.
Very cool. Very cool. Now, you know, we ended the hunting story a little short there. Go back. So you in closing, let's kind of talk about that. You walk up on this big buck. I mean, did you realize right away that he was, you know, as big as you thought he was?
Absolutely. I knew he was a booner. I didn't, he was obviously a lot bigger than I imagined. I mean, I knew he was a booner. I knew he was pretty close to what I thought he was on scoring. But man, to put your, I was going to say to put your hands around these, but to put your hooks around.
Put your hooks out.
antlers like fine. This is unbelievable. I mean, the mass that he had was unreal, you know, and he's just a very unique, awesome deer. And then, you know, here I have a little bit of history from the year before, even though I didn't get to hunt at that farm a year before. But, you know, to find a shed and to see, you know, if both sheds were about the same, you know, he was a, you know, mid 160 deer, but then now, you know, you got 160 that turned into 180. I mean, it just, you know, it was really, really neat to have the history of finding, you know, at least one shed before. And then to hunt that farm for a year and kind of, you know, we got other deer that were, you know, phenomenal deer. And from last year, and then this year, we got the same farm. But to see some of the deer that I've seen this year that were the same caliber or what I had seen the year before, I mean, I had another picture of a deer this year that was probably scoring 170, 180s. And none of us ever had an opportunity to kill him this year. But, you know, a couple weeks ago, I went muzzleloading hunting for the very first time. I took my crossbow, and Jeff, my buddy, was sitting with me in the same deer stands I killed this one, the 180. And I was wanting to go with my crossbow, and my buddy's like, "You ever shot a muzzleloader?" I said, "No." "Let's just go with a muzzleloader." I said, "That's fine. I've never done muzzleloaders. Let's do it." And I ended up killing an 8-pointer this year out of the same stand, but that 8-pointer scored 152. So that's a great 14.5-inch G2s.
Can you share the address with everybody? Can you share the address?
I'm thinking people that's wanting to follow me around now.
You're probably pretty easy to follow. You kind of stick out in the crowd. Follow that guy with the hooks.
That's exactly right.
So how old do you think that buck was? The big one.
The big one. You know, my taxidermist, he thought he was probably in five and a half, almost 6 year old range. I mean, he might have had another year to grow, but I'd say he was getting pretty close to being at his top, you know. And, yeah. And it's funny because the other day, actually, I haven't even told anybody this story, but not long ago, probably a couple weeks ago, we was over doing a little bit of work, you know, because we're all tagged out, season's over. And, season might not have been over by then, but anyway, we were tagged out. We went to the farm to do something and was leaving. And, actually, season was in because Zachary had shot a deer, couldn't find it. So we went back at dark to see if we could find this deer. Never did find it. I'm assuming he missed. We ran out of blood. We were leaving the farm on a ranger and got out on the road, and a deer crossed out in front of us. And I'm talking about was 15 yards from the ranger, and he was pushing 200. And I mean, you know, how many people even get to see a 200 inch deer, 180 inch deer? Not very often.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So there's another one out there that's made it. So it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. So I haven't seen a picture yet. We've just been talking back and forth. Mm-hmm. What was your big buck? Was he a 10, an 8, a 9? I mean, what was he, typical, non-typical?
He was pretty typical. I mean, everything pretty much lines up pretty well. I call him, he's a mainframe 10, but the cool thing about him is he's got split eye guards on both sides. They're both identical on the split. So, you know, I made him a 12, but his 10 points, it seemed like everything was perfect. You know, if one was 10 inches, the other one was 10 inches. I mean, everything was perfect on him. Another really cool thing is when I send you pictures, you'll see on the right side of his main beam, he's got a hole, like a little tunnel that goes down inside of his main beam towards the tip. And I never knew what that was. And my taxidermist said that when they're in velvet, you know, a bug will tunnel a hole inside their velvet and get inside there. And I mean, you know, it's probably, I don't know, a half inch, 3/4 inch deep, a little burrow, whatever, where I guess a bug gets up inside there and makes a home whenever they're in velvet. So I thought that was pretty cool to see that. He's got a lot of character. He's a really, really neat deer. He's got a couple, smaller points, you know, probably less than an inch around his base, but, well, not several, but maybe a couple, two or three, you know, but I call him mainframe 10, without the split G2s. I mean, without the split eye guard. Sorry.
Okay, so, cool.
But yeah, I'll definitely.
Well, Matt, yeah, I appreciate you being on. I got a pack today to go speak at a wild game dinner in Seattle. So I'm glad I was able to squeeze you in. I know your schedule was tight, and we've been trying to get this thing coordinated, and we were able to get it done. So thank you very much for being on today and telling your story. And best of all, I'm sure you'll inspire some people. That's awesome.
Since you mentioned the wild game dinners, I love doing wild game dinners. I've done a couple, and to be able to share a story of my faith and really what the outdoors had done for me in my life. And it really inspired me to be the greatest that I could be, that's the whole part of my life is my faith. And I'd love to do some more if anybody wants to do it, or follow me on Instagram Facebook.
I'll give your name out for sure. I can give your name out a little bit.
Absolutely.
So, cool.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much. And I appreciate, having me on and sharing my story.
No problem at all. Take care.
Hi, thanks.
Bye-bye. Man, what an amazing life story of just overcoming great obstacles and having a positive attitude through it all, and then being rewarded with an amazing buck. To learn more about Jason, visit his website at jasonkoger.com. That's jasonkoger.com. To learn more about me or to book me for a wild game dinner, visit my website at tracybreen.com, tracybreen.com. Between now and the next episode, if you could get on iTunes or Google Play or wherever it is you listen to podcasts, and give me a positive review, I'd appreciate it. Until next time, have a great day, and God bless.